Welcome to Resiliency Redefined. I'm your host, Robin, and I am thrilled to share with you information about resiliency, well-being, performance, education, business, parenting, and everything in between. I'm committed to joining you each week to talk about these big ideas and bring them into action, habits, tools, strategies, tactics that allow us to finally uncover what it takes to truly be well. And I'm just so excited that you're here. Welcome to Resiliency Redefined. So on today's episode, we are doing a part two on burnout. Last day, I was able to share some of the theory behind burnout, started to introduce a few strategies and tactics, and really did my best to try and level set what we think about when we talk about burnout. And today, I want to pick up where we left off that conversation and focus a wee bit more on other strategies or protocols that we could put into place. So if you are joining at this episode and you hear the last episode, again, feel free to dive over there, jump over there to get caught up. Otherwise, there's going to be enough, hopefully, here to keep you excited, engaged, and just really maybe look at burnout in a new way. So when we think about the action of burnout, one of the things that we noted is that there aren't any necessarily like real direct biomarkers that says whether or not a person is burned out or not burnt or is burnout or where they're at. And I do appreciate there's a lot of overlap between like some of the symptomology of burnout and also that we see in depression. So a question I often get asked is, how do we discern what is burnout from like an occupational piece or what is depression? Because there is overlap. That was such a great question that somebody asked recently. Now, when we look at how the World Health Organization defines burnout, how they would respond to that is, once the work is removed, does a person get back to their normal? Okay, so once that, if we like alleviated the occupational component, are they still showing some of those signs that then might lead to what we would call depression, perhaps? Because again, you remove the one variable and all of a sudden it's like this unlock, everything else kind of falls back into place. If we remove that variable of work and the person is still really struggling, there is that potential that perhaps the burnout pushed them to this place of depression symptomology. So I hope that makes sense. So again, the big idea there is, if you remove the work, remove that difficult boss, like remove that variable, do people kind of bounce back quickly? Then that's when we would say it's more likely the person was experiencing occupational burnout. Okay, so let's say, doesn't matter how we got ourselves into this predicament, we are now in this predicament where we notice we have these really weary nervous systems. Perhaps we are really leaning into some of those feelings of burnout. What do we do about it? So last day, we talked really quickly about dialing in our nutrition in terms of like simplifying it, simplifying the movement practices, and finding a way for expression, or what we call emotional digestion. So how do we digest some of these big emotions that we are feeling? So we started there. Other ideas that I want to encourage us to think about today are different forms of rest for our nervous system. And what's interesting about this idea is that this is so much more than just physical rest. And I'll give you an example. I recall working with someone who was experiencing high levels of burnout, and they said, No amount of physical sleep is going to address how weary my soul feels. Like, just think about that for a moment. No amount of sleep is going to address how weary my soul feels right now. So there's this spiritual depletion for some. So yeah, it might be physical, and there are physical components peppered throughout all of these forms of burnout, but there's going to be different approaches that we can be thinking about it. So to get us started, yes, rest, right? We want radical recovery when it comes to actual sleep and rest. As I've shared with you before, one of my favorite little practices is this notion of like, don't believe anything your brain processes or interprets after 8 p.m., right? We're depleted, we're tired. When we're in a burnout season, maybe that 8 p.m. becomes like 4 o'clock, or maybe we just like surrender that, like, hey, you know what? I am not firing it on all cylinders. I need to just have a trusted person that who can help me just kind of make sense of the world right now, because maybe we don't even see all of our blind spots. Like, we're not in that place where we're even able to process what's going on. So again, giving ourselves that wee bit of reprieve, that physical rest, yes, up our sleep, using our naps. Remember, there's two types of naps, that one nap, 20 minute power nap every day, to have just a 20 minute nap. And we know if you can wake up before that 20 minute, like at that 20 minute mark, what's happening there is you're not going into that deeper sleep or N3 sleep, where we get into the adenosine cycle, where our brain washes out all of that built up plaque. So you won't feel groggy and it won't affect your nighttime behavior and sleep. So again, a 20 minute power nap. And as we jokingly say, drink a cup of coffee, then close your eyes for 20 minutes. You don't actually have to sleep for the whole 20 minutes. You might only sleep for 3 or 4 minutes. But when that alarm goes off, you get up, you've had a little nappuccino, and you are ready to go. So using a 20-minute power nap, ensuring though you're also getting the what we call the heart nap, or the emotional nap, which is a 90-minute nap at least once a week, maybe even more if it's available to you, to give your heart a rest. And what the research shows, those 90-minute mat naps, that's a full sleep cycle. It's going to, yes, increase your energy, but it also increases your compassion, your empathy, and not just for others, for yourself. So those weekend little naps can do a lot of good and repair. So that's the physical rest. The other type of rest is finding ways to put some guardrails around the emotion, because sometimes we need a rest from the emotions, which means like, oh, if we're in a season where there's so much uncertainty and anxiety and grief and change, sometimes we need a break from our own self. We literally need a break from ourselves. So finding little escapes where those emotions, it's not that we're ignoring them or like avoiding them or pushing them down. We just get a bit of a break from them. A way to hit pause on just that mental turmoil. So one of my go-to practices that I've shared before, this is why I read one fiction book a day, because I just pause all of the, as Jillian Carr likes to say, the adulting in my life. And I can just like get lost in a beautiful story. I can just get lost in just something else completely unrelated to everything that I'm stick handling. And again, for me, it's a strategy that helps manage my hyper-focus with ADHD, but it also gives me a break from my emotion. I can experience emotion of other people in the story that I don't have to fix, that I do not have to solve, which already has an end point. When you see the end, you close the book and you've just got a break. So finding refuge in places or practices or behaviors that are going to give you an emotional rest simply from yourself. So we talk about that emotional rest. I hope you're kind of catching the point on there. The other type of rest we talk about is sensorial rest. So this is a rest or a break from lights, noise, inbox messages, pings, like dings, all of the things. Like literally it's why a lot of times when I'm traveling, for example, I use noise canceling headphones and maybe not even listen to anything. Like I literally wear my headphones in certain environments simply because I can't handle all of the chit chat, the noise, the all of the different sounds. Getting a bit of a sensorial break can be wildly restorative. So again, a practice could be having your headphones, right? Teenagers and their angsty headphones and their hoodies, gosh, they're onto something, right? They're just getting a break. And what's even remarkable is, so Jax, he usually has like one headphone in, or ear pod or AirPod. I don't, those little things, the little buds. He usually sometimes just walks around with one in his ear. And at first I thought like, oh, what are you doing? Like, why do you have to do that? And I recall not that long ago walking through an environment, like I was in an airport and I still needed to be aware of what was going on. I couldn't just block everything out, but I even found comfort in just having one in my ear, because essentially I was reducing the auditory stimuli by 50% by just having it quieted slightly. So, Jax, again, shout out, brother. You're onto something. Thank you for that. Thank you for that little suggestion by proxy. So, sensorial break. The other big sensorial break I would encourage you to think about is, oh gosh, these screens. And a practice that we talk about in screen behavior is the notion of the 20-20-20. So, every 20 minutes that you're on a screen, every 20 minutes, look away for about 20 seconds, about 20 feet in the distance. So let me reframe that protocol. So every 20 minutes, just pause for 20 seconds, look away from your monitor, your screen, and look about 20 feet away from you, again, just for 20 seconds. And what the research shows there is it just gives our optical nerve enough of a break that we aren't kind of squinting all the time, because we tend to get into these practices of looking at screens with our like faces all scrunched up and our shoulders all scrunched up. And looking away is just a little break for that nerve. So that way we're not overtaxing our optical nerve. So again, that sensorial practice could be another example. Okay, friends, we're going through this list hot and heavy. We're going to get through it. The next one, and this one's kind of fascinating, it's the idea of the productivity rest, the notion that we always have to be doing something, always have to be moving that needle forward, always needing to be able to justify the time spent. I want you to ensure that sometimes you get a break from always being productive so you can foster and cultivate creativeness, like spontaneity. Just that idea of lightness that happens when we do other things, perhaps a hobby or perhaps like an activity that's like outside of being productive. And you're not doing it to make money. You're not doing it to learn per se. You're simply doing it because you want to. And this is your life. And I want you to have so many things that you do every day simply because you want to, regardless of what other people say. Right? There's so many have to's and got to's. I want you to have something that you do just because. And it doesn't need to be improving my fitness. It doesn't have to be improving my mental health, my emotional health. Gosh, sometimes it's just fun to have behaviors that serve no other purpose than you just want to do it. So having some spaciousness from that notion of always being productive. And even when I hear people say, for example, like, hey, what did you do this weekend? And they say nothing. I'm like, that's not nothing. That is something that's really important. Being unscheduled, free, opportunities for spontaneity. That's really important to our overall well-being. Okay, here we go. Another little bit of a rest is a social rest, literally a break from other people. And I know you can love them dearly and they're your favorite humans on the planet. I happen to have three of my own favorite humans on the planet. And there is nothing wrong with sometimes saying, I just need a minute for myself, just needing a minute from always being on point or being kind of available and have full access to you all the time. Forgive me if I've shared the story before, but I recall one time when Ava was little, she's like, hey, mama, can I borrow something out of your shower? And I'm like, yeah, help yourself. And she came downstairs and she's like, mama, why was there a coffee cup in your shower? And I said, because I drank my coffee there this morning. And she's like, oh my gosh, we were looking for you everywhere. And I said, I know. That's why I like needed to drink my coffee upstairs by myself for just a minute. So I could spend some time making sure that I was okay, making sure that I was ready and fully present for then that moment when I am connecting with my people, that I'm really showing up how I want to show up for them. Having a few minutes of a break from all of the social roles and responsibilities, it's not selfish, it's science. You need to make sure you are okay. Now, the last one, and again, I love this kind of notion of these different forms of rest. The last one I wanted to bring here for us to chat about today was this idea about like just the way of the world, like a break from the world where we have the opportunity to cultivate our spiritual practices. One of the things that I have seen so often in this research, working with people all around the planet, the people who are really well, like I mean, like deeply solid and sturdy, they have some type of a spiritual practice, whether it be journaling or prayers or meditation. They find this solitude of rest and peace and surrender that we can't get in a supplement bottle. We can't get that at the gym. And I love when people say, no, Robin, gym is medicine, 100%. Solitude is the church, right? It's that church where we get to have whatever you define that as, where you get to really lock in with the things that matter most. Like, just again, the space where we don't have to be productive. We don't have to solve anything. It's like somewhere where you can find rest. And again, whether that's in scripture, whether that's journaling, maybe it could be like a conversation with a friend that just is exactly what your soul needed, but something for that soul to be protected and looked after. And again, one of my favorite perspective quotes is that notion that perhaps we're actually spiritual beings having a human experience versus humans trying to create a spiritual experience. And I'll put it in the show notes. It was an amazing French philosopher who said that. I am going to butcher the name, so I'm not even going to try in this moment, but it's the notion that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. So we want to make sure to protect that light. So if we're in earth, like the world, the noise, the uncertainty, all the change, the just this feeling of almost dread and panic when we look at the state of the world, like geopolitical, all the things, we have to have an escape from that every once in a while to be able to go to a place where we know that all will be well. And again, that's going to look different for everyone. And there's no one right way to do any of these things. But again, it's just helping to recognize that certain behaviors and protocols, habits and practices, rituals and routines, this is how we build this hedge of protection to ensure that we can be okay and continue to show up for the people that matter most in the work that we're called to do. Now, the last little idea to kind of land this plane on this conversation is to also recognize there are a few other little, what we would consider biohacks that could help. Petting a puppy, petting your dog, time with your animals releases oxytocin in a very gentle way, getting those puppy pets. We get the same effect when we look at pictures of people that we love. Okay, that's going to release that oxytocin. Other ways that we can get it, babies, right? Holding a baby also releases that oxytocin, but looking at pictures of people you love. And one of the new bedtime practices that I have started to do is before I go to bed, especially when I'm traveling, I have this little, it's almost like a little carousel video of the faces of all of the people that I love and the people who love me. And I take a moment, my last activity I do with my phone before I put it aside so I can get good sleep is I look at the faces of the people past and present who love me and I love them. And that's the last thing I want to see before I close my eyes. So again, as I share, I'm a big reader, so I read. And when I notice I'm about to call it a day and stop reading, I just take a moment to look at that carousel of the faces of the people, especially the ones who aren't here with us anymore, right? I look at that picture of my mom smiling and I want that be the last thing that I think about before I fall asleep is this army of people around me that I know have my back here and beyond. So my friends, these small practices, they aren't that small after all. It isn't going to resolve burnout completely, but what it will do is put you in a place where you're able to get to the shore. Again, whatever that looks like for you to get to the shore so you know that you are okay and you matter and your well-being matters because there's only one you and the world needs you, but we need you to look after you in the meantime. So my friends, I hope that was helpful. Please continue to send your questions in. And if you found this particularly useful, pass it to somebody who you want to have a conversation about these ideas with. Be like, hey, I want to talk about this. Can I send you this podcast? And then can we have a conversation? And just let's see the ripple effect about finding a gentler approach to be able to face all of this unwell world together. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now. Thank you for spending time with this podcast episode today. I hope you found something helpful in Resiliency Redefined. please feel free to share it with somebody who you might think could benefit. Maybe there was something useful, something in particular that you think you could pay forward. Also, if you have a moment, please feel free to rate and review this podcast wherever you like to listen to your podcasts. It means the world to me. And again, thanks for your time. Thank you for your interest. Take good care, and I'll see you next time.